Clear prop.
Star 73, Cherokee number 2, following twin traffic, 3 mile final. Clear custom. 1 Charlie Bravo, Lakeshore runway 25, going 4 mile final.
This is Behind the Prop with United Flight Systems owner and licensed pilot Bobby Doss, and its co-host, Major Airline Captain and designated pilot examiner Wally Mulhern. Now let's go Behind the Prop.
What's up, Wally?
Hey, Bobby, how are you?
I am fantastic. This is a long-distance recording session. Wally's sitting in a hotel room that I'm looking at him in right now on my screen in Honolulu, Hawaii, and I am stuck at United Flight Systems. So two different sides of the planet here a little bit, and two different climates for sure. So today, as we record thousands of miles apart, we are going to talk about one of our listener questions or one of the listeners' ideas. One of our listeners brought this to our attention, and we can't wait to record the subject. So what's the topic? The topic is expectations for solo. And it's something I talk about a lot. I know Wally's heard it throughout his aviation career. It is a moniker that many egos get in the way of, and we're going to talk about it today. So unfortunately, Wally's got me beat, but I soloed at 31 hours and not unproud of that in the least bit. I never wanted to solo. My instructor kept trying to get out of the airplane and I kept pulling him back in. But I'm glad I did, of course, and it's a big day. I'll never forget that day. Wally soloed much shorter than me. When did you solo, Wally?
Mine was about 8.6 hours a long time ago.
A long time ago. So the thing that I'll start and clear the slate right off the bat on this episode is it really doesn't matter. Wally being at 8.6 and me 31 does not change the way I feel about him or the way he feels about me or what is on my commercial certificate or what was on his commercial certificate. I think if we're shooting for the goal of a commercial certificate, I bet many people get to commercial within plus or minus 10 hours, you know, of 250 hours based on the regulations. I've seen many people come through with a lot less because they have a ton of simulator time. And I've seen people come through with a little bit more, but it's probably somewhere between 225 and 275 for most commercial pilots. But why is it such a big deal to want to solo at a lower number? And I'm sure there's people that compete. Wally, you told me a story back in the day. I think you and your buddies competed on solo time. Was that true?
We did, and it was kind of an unwritten. And it's not like we put things up on a board or anything like that, but we were aware of where everybody else was, and I don't know if that's good or bad. I will say this. I'm looking at my records right now. I have administered 740 check rides in the last five and a half years or so. Never once have I looked. And so that's 740 logbooks that I've looked at. Never once have I looked at a logbook to see when the person soloed as a student, you know, as a student pilot. Zero. Never, nada. I've never looked at it, and I've never made any correlation with, oh boy, this is a really good pilot. They soloed at X number of hours. This is not a very good pilot. They soloed at X number of hours. So it really doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything at all to me as the examiner. And like Bobby said, we all probably get to 200 or get to the commercial, if that's our goal, at about the same time.
Yeah, and I talk to parents and kids when they come in here and they want to learn how to fly and they want to know the process, and I talk about solo and I talk about private, and there's all these fake numbers out there, you know, what the national average is, what this school's average is, what this instructor's average is. I think there's so many things that are dependent on that. I'm sitting here, it's on the weekend, right before we published this episode, but if you flew only on weekend days, the airport's always going to be busier. It's always going to be more difficult to learn or potentially solo. If you're in uncontrolled airspace at a single strip field with no other aircraft on it, I'm sure you're going to solo sooner. But that doesn't mean you're going to get done with cross country stuff any sooner, because you won't be able to handle towered airports. It's because they're going to be foreign to you. So I don't think it matters a lot if you solo at 30 or 8. I don't think it matters a lot if you get your private at 44 or 64. I think I was 73, by the way. And I think ultimately the goal is to get to commercial and probably do it as economically as possible. Before we started recording, I was joking with Wally. He might have soloed before me, but I guarantee you I split time better than anybody when it was time building time or cross country time. And I would be willing to bet just about anybody I was frugal enough that I got done with my instrument cross country and my instrument rating and my commercial rating with as few dollars out of pocket as possible. So what's the bigger goal? Save money, solo early. And I think anything that creates pressure is probably not a good thing when you're learning how to fly aircraft.
Yeah. Sometimes competition can be good. Sometimes it's bad. I've told the story of driving home one time with my young daughter in the back of the car, and her friend who lived next door to us was out riding her bicycle, and her training wheels were not on the bicycle. And my daughter saw that. She still had training wheels on her bicycle. And the day before, the two of them had been out in the front riding bikes with training wheels. And my daughter looked at her friend, and she immediately said to me, "Dad, take my training wheels off." I mean, she was mad. And so we went in the garage. We got out the tools. I took the training wheels off. She got on that bike and just started riding. And I thought, well, geez, why didn't we do this 3 or 4 months ago? But there was an example of a little competition. Maybe was good for her. Now, other people may not react that way. We could compare what we're talking about here. When you say, we could compare it to knowledge test results. When someone comes for a check ride, most check rides, unless it's an add-on, there are going to be knowledge test results involved, and I have to look over those and actually test the applicant on what they missed. So, I see the score and I pay attention to it, and if I see a 98, I think, well, gee, yeah, there's only one knowledge test code that I have to look up. If it's a little bit less, there might be more knowledge tests. Now, the fact of the matter is that in the ground portion of the check rides, most of the stuff that I need to go over with as per the knowledge test is covered anyway. So there's usually 3 or 4 or 5 extra questions I may have to come up with to test the applicant on that. But I'm not sure if I've ever seen a correlation between doing extremely well on the knowledge test with doing extremely well on the check ride. I've seen 70s do really good jobs, and I've seen 97s not so good jobs.
Yeah, I wonder if there's any science or predictability of on solo time versus flying time. I just, as an owner of a bunch of aircraft that are insured to be soloed and that I've seen soloed many, many times, it is a pretty scary thought that someone might be soloing a plane with 7 to 10 hours. I can't imagine Wally letting you solo my plane at 8 hours when you were just learning. The amount of things that could happen that maybe don't happen very regularly, but could happen, that would surprise a student, that would catch a student off guard, is daunting, right? A rough running engine, a cylinder fails, a bird strikes and goes through the windshield, a bigger aircraft has a incident on the big runway here, and they close the big runway, and now they've got to land on a runway that's 50 feet wide instead of 150 feet wide, with a crosswind of some sort. The winds could change, going from north to south. Hopefully we're doing a good job and not letting someone get dispatched and something like that. But, we're the mercy of Mother Nature, and man, just so many things could happen that I just don't think students are ready for in that single digit time frame. And It's probably some of that's the cycle of this airport, right? Three runways, lots of traffic, big jet traffic, lots of extend your downwind, I'll call your base. Just, it's a lot going on here. Might be different if we were in a 75-foot runway that was 6,000 feet long somewhere else in the middle of nowhere. Maybe the numbers would be a little bit different. But let's talk about realistic expectations. And we'll use this towered airport as an example. Big runway, little runway, water runway. So let's take the water runway out of the picture for just a second and say, okay, what's realistic expectations for a student pilot to solo? And I'm going to give you some examples, Wally, and I didn't tee these up for you, but let's have some unfiltered question and answer. So I'm a student pilot at this or any other flight school you do check rides for at this airport, and I come to train once a month with just no other filter. What would you think? How many hours would you think I'd need to fly if I came to a 2-hour lesson once a month? When would I be ready to solo?
It's going to be a while. I would say
maybe never.
Yeah,
maybe never.
Yeah. It's going to be a while.
There's just not enough consistency.
Right.
I have 3-hour lessons, normally get 2 hours of flight time, and I come 3 times a week no matter what.
Yeah, 3 times a week, that's going to be a quick solo.
Pretty quick.
Relatively, yeah.
Yeah, then, okay, but let's change that and say I do that in the middle of late winter in Houston when it might get to freezing and it's always overcast. How many weeks will it take me to solo?
Yeah, somewhere in the middle of those two.
Yeah, there's always these things that come into play that the student pilot, maybe the flight school, maybe the instructors can't control. I saw a guy that was in a hurry, had a bunch of external pressures, that he flew with a different flight instructor every lesson. But he flew 3 times a week. It's going to take you a long time to get someone to endorse you if you don't fly with the same person. You fly with 5 different instructors over 3 different weeks. None of those individuals are going to sign you off because they couldn't have possibly seen everything that they have to see in the regulations to endorse you.
Right.
So it's a happenstance. It's a problem that was created by those people to prevent that person from soloing in a realistic time frame.
And I think what an instructor is going to want is they're going to want consistency. They want to see that you did a really good job today, and then we'll come back tomorrow. And if we can see consistency and we do a really good job tomorrow, okay, that might be the time to go ahead and cut them loose and let them solo.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I saw someone who I heard about, kind of bubbled up to me at the fly school, that there was good days and bad days. And bad days always seemed to be a little bit of crosswind. And the instructor wasn't comfortable. And the student says, well, how comfortable do you have to be? And I think the answer is pretty simple. When the instructor doesn't have to be in the airplane anymore, right? When the instructor doesn't have to land the aircraft for you because of a crosswind. Not just one crosswind, but consistently you're able to land the aircraft in crosswinds and a little bit of adverse conditions, right? I think there's so much as it relates to what would a student pilot do with 10 or 12 hours if they had a right main blowout on them on landing. Like, that would be hard for a seasoned pilot to deal with and know exactly how to handle that situation. So, I saw somebody hit a turtle recently on the runway. You know, that's going to throw somebody off pretty drastically if they're a student pilot. So I think the realistic expectations need to be that you're really super proficient in power on and power off stalls, that you understand the physics and really what's going on and why are those things practiced so much early on. And then really, really good at your pattern work, right? You gotta make sure the winds aren't taking you into the runway or blowing you way far away from the field. And I just don't think in a setting at this airport that you're going to do that very well with just 10 hours of flight time. I don't think it's going to take 30, but I would say it's probably somewhere in between there. And I read a couple articles preparing for this. I think there was a couple AOPA magazine articles that talked about 20 is the sweet spot. And I read a couple that said 25 and some said 15. But I don't think it's going to be bad for you to have a few extra flights. And that's not because I own a flight school. That's just because it's a safety thing. And the better you are prepared for some abnormalities, the better you're going to be when those abnormalities present themselves.
The other thing is, there is no official data that tells us when people solo. The FAA could, if they wanted to, they could go in and they could look at all the applications for certificates and ratings, private pilot certificates. And over in the left-hand corner, there's a total flight time. There's a number. So they could say, okay, yeah. And they can average that up, and they could say the national average for a private pilot is whatever, 61.2 hours. There's no place where the time of a solo gets recorded. So a lot of it is hearsay.
No doubt. And do you think everybody's honest when they answer that question? Probably not.
Probably
a little
not.
Fibbing going on there. Hey, you know, my running joke is if somebody plays golf today and I say, what'd you shoot? And they said 71. Guess what I shot? 70. I'm going to beat you by one every right. time. Doesn't matter what you say. There's a right. commercial on TV not too long ago about golfers getting up to go play golf, and they were being interviewed, and one said, I get up at 7 a.m., and the next guy said, I get up at 6 a.m., and the next guy said, 5, 4. One of the guys at the end said, I get up at 1 o'clock in the morning to practice every day. And, of course, that's not realistic, but it doesn't matter what's been told or said. And I think we talked about a sports team, the Patriots, who went 16-0 not too long ago. Did they win a ring for going 16-0?
They didn't, and nobody really remembers that team. When you think of probably all-time great football teams, the team that probably comes to mind is the 1972 Miami Dolphins, who went undefeated, and finished it up with a Super Bowl victory. We don't think of those Patriots who went 16-0 and I guess won two playoff games and lost the Super Bowl. So that's like, yeah, I soloed at 6 hours and got my private at 140 hours. You know, you maybe won a battle, but didn't win the big one.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about competition. We talked about some other external pressures wanting to solo fairly early on. And I think you as a student pilot and you CFIs out there have to be aware of those external pressures. We had a really good student here who, I want to say around the third or fourth flight, he was telling me, I have to be done at 41 hours. And I knew we were in trouble right from that statement, because there's something pulling on him that's going to make it very difficult for him to accomplish all the things that he needs to accomplish if his primary goal is to get done at 41 hours. And we saw milestones come, and I don't think that he was always ready, but he was pushing the team to make him get ready or get out there to do that milestone. That's a slippery, slippery slope. It's not one you want to be on the wrong side of by pushing yourself to get to some false number that others are pushing you to, your ego's pushing you to, a friend or a boss is pushing you to. It's just not going to turn out to be the right time if that's all that you're measuring that stick by. Now, you're proficient and you're able to fly the aircraft and you have all the skills required to go out and do the flight on your own, that's a completely different ball game as far as I'm concerned. And the CFIs around here, when they tell me I have zero concern about that person going solo, that puts peace in my heart really, really quick, because they know that they're not going to make mistakes, they're not going to take chances, and they're going to be a good solo student. Other external pressures that I think, what external pressures do to some of the students that I've seen at this fly school is get too confident in wins that they can't have experience in. They can't have enough experience in. You know, if you soloed at 8.6, I'm assuming you didn't go solo that day in a 17 knot crosswind.
No, no.
And
there wasn't much wind at all.
Yeah, it was probably calm everywhere. And I think that that's something that they lose sight of. They think they're consistent and ready to accomplish that goal, but Mother Nature still plays a big part. We're flying in a three-dimensional space with winds in it, and you never know where those winds may come from. For a student pilot with 8.6 hours, variable at 7 is a pretty scary number for me, right? Maybe they're capable of a consistent 7, maybe, but a variable at 7, that's scary over hot concrete in this city for sure. So I think that we could skin external pressures a million different ways, but if external pressures are getting you to get into winds you're not used to, getting you to go maybe at times a day you're not used to, you're trying to get that last solo cross country done, and you know daylight's running out, all those things are going to make you, they're going to lead up to that chain of events that might not end well, and I would caution you to not do it. The last fairly big incident we had was a student, and I remember that the student was told on the radio, no delay, there's a I think it was a citation 3 mile final or something, and he was doing full taxi back stop and goes, and I wish, and he wishes, I'm sure we all wish now, that he would have said unable and waited 3 or 4 minutes, because he could have kept his, you know, kept his wits and his everything in his wheelhouse there, but that little bit of rushing made him make a mistake and made him miss something, and it didn't end well. Luckily, nobody got hurt, but you know, you don't want any external pressure like that. And at 8 hours, you're not going to be as equipped as you would be at 20 hours for sure. So, how do we get to a point where we can think about the right things to get to where we want to get for solo day? I think it is a little bit about consistency and repeatability. If you fly the pattern once a month and you go practice in the practice area once a month, you're not going to be ready. You're not going to have enough rhythm. It is a perishable skill. And if you don't keep doing it, you're going to lose some of those skills. So I think you got to do it on a fairly regular basis. I think you have to be consistently doing it on a regular basis before you're really going to be equipped to go solo for the first time for sure.
Yeah, I just remember when, as I think back to my solo, there were things that I just didn't know. If I went out and did a run up and had a rough running engine on one magneto, I would have had no clue what to do. I mean, hopefully I would have taxied back in. But I do remember on that solo, it was at a controlled airport, a very, very not a busy controlled airport at all. But I remember taking off, and they gave me right closed traffic on my first takeoff. And I had never done right traffic in my life. Every time around the traffic pattern was left traffic. So that was a little bit of we had talked about it, of course, and I just remember thinking, well, I guess I just turn right. And I did. And I remember, as an instructor, the measuring stick that I used was, can we go around and can we do 3 times in the pattern without me saying a word? And if I could do that, then I would get out and let the student solo. I do remember listening on the radio one time, and my student is up, and he's in a Tomahawk. It was 2549 Alpha was the number on it. And this was in the pattern, which is kind of weird, but the controller asked him to ident, and my guy says, Roger, 2549 Alpha. And the controller says, 2549 Alpha, ident. And then the guy calls back and he says, Roger, November, 2549 Alpha. And so at that point, I realized that I had never taught the student about the little ident button on the transponder. So after them going back and forth 3 or 4 times, the controller just says, son, I want you to look over there at your transponder. You got a button on there that says ident. I want you to push that button. And my student says, "Yes, sir." And it all was good. And so we kind of had a laugh of that when he got back in. But, you know, there's an example of that usually comes up at some point in the flight training. But with this particular guy, obviously it never had, or maybe it had and he had just forgotten about it. But not a big deal. But, you know, just one of those little things that might happen.
Well, and I do think that maybe people that want to solo, they should challenge themselves. Do I understand everything that's on this radio or everything that's on this transponder or everything that's on this GPS, everything that's in this ammeter, this voltmeter? I mean, I think about the electrical issues we've had, you know, over 4 years of owning a fly school. You know, what would a student pilot do at a controlled airport if they lost their electrical system? Obviously, they've lost radios. How proficient are they with light gun signals at 7 or 8 hours? I don't think I have them memorized today, to be honest. I'd have to go to a cheat sheet.
Right.
I know green's better than red, but at the end of the day, you think about the mountain of information that we have to be a successful solo pilot. It would be difficult to have all that at an early time frame in an aviator's career. And that should just tell you that it doesn't matter if you solo at 8.5 or 28.5 or 48.5. Look, the time when you feel comfortable and you feel prepared is probably going to be the right time. I will say I never wanted to solo, and I started the show that way. My instructor kept saying today's the day, and I'm like, nah, one more day. And I might have been better off had I listened a little bit earlier, but 3 more days didn't hurt me, didn't change my aviation career, probably only helped me be a better pilot. But don't make it so strict of a rule on yourself when you want to solo that's what drives a lot of your decisions, because that probably means you're not going to be the greatest pilot in the world down the road, because you'll make bad decisions on other things in the future as well.
And I will say this to CFIs. This is my opinion and my opinion only. I think it's best not to tell your student that tomorrow they're going to solo. They probably have a pretty good idea of where we are. And I know it's kind of tough, but I'll just relay a little story of mine. And I think I've shared this on the show before, but it was my first student I ever had. And this happened about 38 years ago, so maybe the statute of limitations is up on this. But I told him that he was going to solo tomorrow. His name was Russell, a really good pilot, really good, a good stick. I mean, he could just fly that airplane. And so the next morning, I drove up to the flight school and I pulled in and I saw Russell's truck was there, and I walked inside and there was no Russell. And I said to the people behind the desk, I said, "Where's Russell?" And so he got the keys to the airplane. He went outside, and I said, "Well, what airplane is he in?" And they told me, and I went out there, and that airplane was not out there. And I thought, "Oh no!" Next thing I know, guess what? I see Russell landing, and Russell taking off. So he just took it on himself to solo. I told him, I said, "You're probably going to solo tomorrow." And he just got to the airport and he just got the airplane and soloed. And so he came in and I'm going to tell on myself here. Yeah. I mean, he soloed without an endorsement. So I said, "Well, you weren't supposed to do that, but let's make what you did legal." So again, hopefully the statute of limitations is up on this. So, instructors, don't do that. No, that was bad on my part as a CFI. And, you know, I think I'm not sure what you add to the student by telling them they're going to solo tomorrow. We're talking about the first solo. And I know there are times where a parent may want to be present, but you know, if somebody wants to be there to witness the solo, you know, try to get those people to be discreet. I mean, when the student looks over there and all 14 of their aunts and uncles and grandparents are standing there, they, you know, that adds to the external pressure.
No doubt. We've had requests from parents like that, and we normally just get in touch with them and ask them not to say anything, right? It's gonna It's going to help the whole situation for sure, no question. The the day I soloed was a big day. I remember it. I'll never forget it. Came back from Brenham. I did my three laps with my instructor. I did my three laps by myself, and it was a big day. And whether it was 31 or 19 or whatever number it was a big day for me, and it'll be a big day for you one day. Don't let those external pressures get you so wrapped around the prop that you have to do it before you're ready. And make sure you understand every switch and every button in that cockpit before you also go as well. CFIs, make sure they're ready and make sure they're flying safely. As always, stay behind the prop and fly safely.
Thanks for checking out the Behind the Prop podcast. Be sure to click subscribe and check us out online at behindtheprop.com. Behind the Prop is recorded in Houston, Texas. Creator and host is Bobby Doss. Co-host is Wally Mulhern. The show is for entertainment purposes only and is not meant to replace actual flight instruction. Thanks for listening, and remember, fly safe.